Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
Sonia, we are in Season 3 of X-Men Evolution. We're up to Episode 8, an episode called Self-Possessed, a very interesting rogue episode, which we're going to be quite excited to break down shortly. Before we do, let's get the plugs out of the way. You can follow me on Twitter, at Willie Simpson. Join the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group on Facebook. And most importantly, if you want to support the show, we are going to be doing no advertisements. We have no plans for Patreon. We're not going to be asking for any of your money, but all we ask for is just 2 minutes out of your day to leave a nice 5-star review on iTunes. That is the best and only way to show support for the show right now. And we really appreciate everyone who does that and takes the time on that level. So thank you for the continued support there. But again, if you like us, leave those nice reviews. That goes a long way. Sonia, before we get into X-Men Evolution, we have to continue our streak of discussing the Disney Plus Marvel television universe. Season 1 of Falcon and the Winter Soldier wrapped up this past Friday, and I wanted to get your thoughts.
Okay. this show... It missed a little bit overall. I think the last episode of the season was good compared to what we got earlier on in the season. They tied up a bunch of the storylines they had. We saw more of kind of like relationship building and character building a little bit, I guess.
But to what end?
Yeah.
I think it wasn't that good, the last episode. I'm going to disagree with you slightly.
Okay.
I don't think it was bad. I think the show overall was mediocre in the end. We've gone through it week by week here. We've told you when we liked episodes. We told you when we disliked them. Just trying to take a little step back now and see it for what it is. It just feels sort of like a lukewarm show.
Well, we were talking about this the other day. I mean, like off microphone, but... that originally the script for this show was really different. The plot line was supposed to be about like a global contagion that takes over.
Supposedly, yeah. I've seen those rumors.
Is it only rumors?
I don't know. I've seen people discuss that they had to do a lot of new scenes and some ADR to like overdub some dialogue and cut a lot of stuff out.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I don't know if that's true. I've seen this, you know, random stupid articles or tweets about it.
I just wonder, like, maybe that original storyline was a lot better and they had to, like, kind of shoehorn in this whole Carly Morgenthau thing.
They might have, they probably filmed a lot of this in 2019 or something, or 2018, who knows. Like, but the point is, if it was about a global contagion, they were like, oh shit, we can't.
It's too upsetting now.
Well, it's not even that it's upsetting, it's like something.
Too close to reality.
Yeah, too close to reality. You can't have a non-COVID plague with superheroes successfully stop in its tracks.
Mm-hmm.
It would just seem kind of dumb right now. I think if that is true, you could actually feel that in the show, that there's something like cobbled together here.
Mm-hmm.
Going on. There definitely feels like there's missing parts, or the stronger parts might shine because they're connected to a stronger narrative.
Mm-hmm.
But specifically about the last episode, I just felt that the big payoffs weren't that interesting. Falcon gets a new suit. He's the new Captain America. Okay. It looks cool, I guess. John Walker becomes U.S. agent. All right. Well, I mean, that's what happens in the comics. And it's like they set him up for a very dark and tortured path, and they kind of punted on it a little bit. They don't exactly redeem him, but they don't condemn him.
But he kind of plays a good guy in this one.
Yeah, he does. So that's what I mean. Like, I mean, that's kind of the character of U.S. Agent 2. He's not, like, entirely an evil asshole. He's just different. What else? I mean, Sharon Carter being the power broker was, like, the biggest who gives a fuck of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, first of all, the power broker, I never cared about it. You know, this fictional character they've just come up with here.
Mm.
And I also just don't care about Sharon Carter, the character.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Emily Van Camp, the actor here, is like, doing much of this part to begin. Like, I was never that invested in her character anyway, mm-hmm. to begin with. And it was, again, there's something weird about the idea that they tried to establish a romance with her and Captain America, even though she was the niece of the woman he really loved, and he actually...
Oh, yeah, we saw that whole series that was, like, pre all of this Disney Plus business that...
Agent Carter.
Agent Carter yeah. show.
Yeah. That was a good... That was a pretty decent show.
Yeah, I thought so, too. And we did get invested with Peggy Carter.
And Steve uses time travel to end up with Peggy Carter anyway. So right. he makes out with her niece... in the present day,
yeah,
and then
weird.
Travels back in time and lives decades in the past with the woman he really likes, and then presumably sees Sharon Carter grow up. Yeah, it's weird. So, I mean, but, you know, the point is, it's like Sharon Carter, who gives a fuck. At least that's my point. What else? I mean...
What did you think of that long speech that Sam delivers?
Just felt... it just felt contrived. I mean, the speech itself was okay. I get his points about trying to... He says there's a complicated situation. We all have to listen to each other. And we all have to, like, understand what, like, power really is. But it's contrived in the sense that he happens to give it on, like, a global live television broadcast with all the news reporters standing around him, directly speaking to the quote-unquote power brokers of this, whatever, this World Security Council
mm-hmm.
that is, like, making these decisions about these international Thanos refugees.
Mm-hmm.
It was just dumb. It felt fake to me. It felt
really fake to me. It
felt staged.
Like, well, not just staged. Like, it didn't bother me so much that they happened to catch him on national television, because given the situation, it's like, okay, I can buy that there would be TV cameras around. I just thought the speech itself was extremely disconnected. He kind of, like, jumped from topic to topic.
It went on a bit too long.
And then, like, at the end, you know, Bucky's like, hey, great job. Like, yeah. did he actually accomplish anything just
Bucky
now?
Bucky said he tuned out.
He was joking.
Yeah, I know, but even still, that was kind of funny. But you know what it reminded me of, weirdly? It reminded me of The Boys, when the boy in that Amazon show about the evil superheroes.
Yeah.
When they're filming their fake Marvel movies that propagandize themselves, mythologize themselves, and
right.
then the director yells cut,
uh-huh.
and all the characters are standing around very jaded and
right.
Sardonically.
Right.
Like, I got that sense that you almost could feel the director yelling cut on this ridiculous speech that Falcon is giving.
Mm-hmm.
Again, ridiculous mainly for its staging and just the contrivance of, like, it just feels lazy to have a character happen to address the world on a news broadcast, and people aren't gonna listen to it and absorb it in any kind of meaningful way.
The contrivance was less of a problem for me than the actual substance of the speech, because, like, basically his message was, you have to do better.
Right, but like, he doesn't really give any specifics.
Right, and, like, that one, like, what is he, a senator, I guess?
Yeah, he's like,
saying,
it's
like,
complicated.
You don't understand.
And he's like, yeah, right. You're right, I don't understand, but you're right, you have to do better.
Right.
But in the end, better just means, like, help the refugees more.
Right.
Which is good, but it's also, you're right, there's something, like, he was trying to, like, toe the line, because he's trying to fall in the line of Steve Rogers and saying,
I stand for America and
what's right, but at the same time, I stand for freedom. Like, I don't know. It's just, it's kind of like Captain America. The point of Captain America is that he's like transcendent of politics in a way,
mm-hmm.
in that he's like a, he represents some kind of ideal that probably doesn't exist anymore.
Mm.
So I
just was disappointed because Sam's whole thing is that he used to be, or is still, I don't know, like a counselor
right.
for
PTSD victims.
Right, for, like, ex-soldiers Army, right. or current soldiers or something. And it's like, this is supposed to be his thing, right? Is
mm-hmm.
that he's, like, good at talking through difficult situations
right.
and that he does have a grasp on what those situations are
the
and
show,
what they're like for people.
The show,
and it fell short.
Right,
you know?
Well, because the show established that the speech was effective and good
right.
and that Sam is smart and brilliant in that way.
Yeah.
The actual substance of the speech, I think, reflected the fact that the writers of the show had a very weighty, complex issue to try to address in a, like I said, a ridiculously contrived way of this, like,
yeah.
impromptu news conference. And I just think there's something lacking in the show's, like, the themes they're trying to address. Because, again, we applaud the show for, like, trying to establish a black Captain America and trying to, like, show what that would really mean for the world, and that he'd probably have a lot of enemies, you know. And it's a bit of meta commentary on what Disney's doing themselves with, like, their intellectual property. And
mm-hmm.
it's like, so it's, that's interesting, but again, it's like, it's tricky to land.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they really went far enough to do it. I mean, an effective scene in the episode was when he takes Isaiah Bradley to the museum and says, like, I've gotten your record exposed and people are going to see that you are a hero.
Right.
And
here's a statue of you now. So right. You're not, like, silenced anymore.
Right. That stuff was great. Like, that was effective. But Sam himself taking up the mantle of Captain America just felt a bit, like, whatever.
It was a little anticlimactic, like, I think.
I just think he should be the Falcon. And that's, it's not to say that, I don't know. I just think that, like, why have a character who is already his own character take on the mantle of another character? Like, why does Captain America have to exist beyond Steve Rogers? He was Captain America, which is kind of like a goofy 1940s idea in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
That it doesn't, you don't need a 21st century Captain America.
Well, in the logic of this show, you do.
Yeah, I guess.
Someone was going to take the shield and do something.
I just think in the logic of Disney trying to perpetuate their IP forever, you do.
Right, and they lost Falcon now. They have to combine names. He's going to be Captain Falcon.
Isn't that a Nintendo character? Yeah, I mean, and I saw rumors that they're going to do a Captain America 4 featuring Malcolm Spellman, who is, the head showrunner of this show, and Sam and Bucky, obviously, will be the star. But it's like, why... I don't understand, like, why even do a Captain America 4 as a movie? Don't you have a lot of other movies to get to? Do we have to perpetuate the Captain America movie series?
People love Captain America.
I know, but it's you've got a million new characters you could play. Like,
yeah.
It's like, how many more Avengers spinoff movies are they going to be? Like, keep it as a TV show. That's fine to me.
Okay.
Like, I don't get why it needs a cinematic entry necessarily to resolve all these storylines they set up that aren't that interesting.
Aren't they mostly resolved?
Well, I mean, U.S. Agent is out there with this so-called Madam Hydra.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Sharon Carter is the evil power broker. I mean, I don't care about her. I don't know. I mean, I find it all, it's like they...
Plus, now he finally became Black Captain America. Like, right. They have to run with that, you know?
Well, what do you mean by that?
I think that's a reason that Disney wants to continue this
because they're making a political statement.
Maybe.
I mean, yeah. I mean, that's fine, but it's just I don't know. I just think like the Captain America brand is. It's like it was fine that it ended.
Yeah.
With Chris Evans, and just have Sam Wilson carry on as one of the Avengers. He doesn't necessarily need the Captain America. I mean, I guess it's just different for like comic book fans like myself, who are used to the idea that, yeah, these heroes go away, like Batman dies.
Right.
But then he comes back to life. So, and like, you know, Robin becomes Batman temporarily.
Right.
And then Bruce Wayne travels through time somehow and, you know, reclaims the mantle of Batman and everything's right.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing happened to Steve Rogers. He dies at the end of Civil War. They kill him. And I don't even remember the exact explanation of how he comes back to life. And I think Bucky maybe becomes Captain America in that version after that temporarily.
Hmm.
But somehow it's like the bullet he was shot with was like a trans-dimensional bullet. And Steve Rogers finds his way back to the main universe, you know, eventually.
Okay.
And you know, they have made Falcon Captain America too in the comics at times. The point is these characters never die in the comics, so you're just always waiting for the main guy to come back. It's never like for long that mm-hmm. the replacement takes over. Happens to Jean Grey in the X-Men many times.
Yeah.
It's just, it is what it is. So it's like, but the reality, we've discussed this before, the actors are aging out of these roles and the filmmakers have to make the choice. Do we carry on this continuity continuously in the sense that like all the stuff that happened in Iron Man happened, Tony Stark is dead, or and we get a new type of Iron Man, whoever it might be, Riri Williams, I guess, would be like the next person they're sort of trying to get. Or do you just recast Tony Stark at some point and relaunch the universe and you just perpetuate it like the comic books?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I mean, I feel like at some point, like maybe in 25 years, Marvel or Disney, if it's still popular, will relaunch the universe entirely, go back to the original characters, Tony Stark, Steve Rogers, whoever, you know, once it's all gone through the mill and everyone from the original run of Marvel movies are dead and retired.
Right. Or you just, like, leave it alone. and like do other properties of the hundreds of other properties that there are.
Right. Just get a whole new company with different intellectual property to exploit and, put out there.
Of Marvel characters. Oh, of Marvel, yeah. Yeah, just like let the Avengers rest for a while, and if you wait long enough, right, you go into the X-Men or whatever else you want to do.
That's my whole point about
Captain. And then it's like, yeah, you leave it alone long enough, and like a whole generation has grown up, and then you relaunch the Avengers if you want at some point.
Right. Well, that was my whole point about Captain America 4. Like, why could we like not, we'd like lay off these Avengers movies for a while? Like, you've got so many X-Men that you could get to, mm-hmm. and Fantastic Four shit. You could do a million different combinations of all those characters.
Yeah.
There's no need for Captain America 4.
Right.
I just don't, there's, I mean, even, I guess like Thor 4 is okay just because, I don't know. It's like an outer space kind of thing. It's a little like the character himself is supposed to never age and be infinite. You know, right. And like how long is that going to carry on with Chris Hemsworth?
Uh-huh.
But like technically, Thor is an immortal god, more or less. So right. Like it just makes more sense from like a comic standpoint. I don't know. I have some mixed emotions about this. I mean, yeah, I'm going to see Captain America 4 mm-hmm. whenever that happens.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I don't know. I'm not an Avengers fan. Ultimately, is what it comes down to.
It's
I guess it's like my embedded bias of being a Captain America fan, though.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fan of Steve Rogers. I'm not a fan of Bucky and of Sam Wilson.
Okay.
You know, like, it's just not as interesting to me. It's the same thing with Batman. Like, I'm a fan of Batman and Bruce Wayne. If DC had established a really, like, long-going Batman movie series, a la Marvel, in the sense that they just had, like, enormous hits after hits, and there's essentially, like, 8 or 9 movies about Batman, it's the same actor, would I be thrilled if, Batman finally dies or something, and it's, like, the next movie's all about all the different Robins? I don't know. I don't, like, care as much about, like, Tim Drake and Dick Grayson. And
but
all
you're
the
not
Robins.
The only demographic that they're playing to.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
I think they're counting on younger audiences being open to the new characters that, not new necessarily, but, like, other characters that they can kind of, like, bring in and freshen up and...
I understand, but, know? Right, that's true. You're absolutely right. I feel like a stick in the mud trying to explain my feelings here. But overall, I mean, I thought the show, it was, like, diverting enough as an entertainment thing for me,
mm-hmm.
but it's not the stuff I care about, so...
I feel like this is kind of what we expected from these shows.
Yeah. You
know? Like, WandaVision, I guess we were really excited for, and it was a little bit of a letdown, ultimately.
To me, like, the more time has passed from WandaVision, the more I think that's a huge letdown.
Mm-hmm.
I was very excited. When they said just kidding about Quicksilver, it took me out of it. And I hate to be one of those guys too. Like that's I feel like that's, but it's like I'm a man of pretty simple tastes. I like the X-Men. I'm excited about the X-Men happening coming up. And when you tease the X-Men in front of me and you get me dreaming about like all these X-Men possibilities and multiple worlds and like trying to see how the crossovers are going to happen and like, and then you just pull the rug from out under me. I'm like, oh, all right. That was just a dumb prank you pulled. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit then.
I was saying, aside from that show, like all the other show trailers that we've seen,
yeah,
we've kind of known that this is how we were going to feel about them.
I think you're right.
The trailers,
yeah.
And we
going
were like,
back a few years.
All right, I'm going to watch that. I'm
right.
Probably not going to like it that much, but it's new Marvel content, so I'm going to stick with it.
Yeah.
And like,
one day we'll
enjoy
get the stuff
it for what
good.
It is and complain about all the things we don't like.
Yeah.
And that's how it's going to be. So.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Like, it, the slate of specific characters they are launching with here are all these side characters, a part of an Avengers universe that I particularly was, like, never that excited to explore deeply.
Mm-hmm.
I, like everyone else, I enjoy the MCU because it's cool that, like, they did a fairly good comic adaptation they brought to life, and it was sort of like a big jazzy, like, fun celebration of their success or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But again, Avengers characters, not nice. I'm waiting for the good stuff.
Yeah.
And the good stuff to me is Spider-Man, which they've just barely scratched the surface on, Fantastic Four, and the X-Men. So that's the really good stuff. And it's like, I've said this point half a dozen times on this podcast. It's amazing what they were able to do with the Avengers, a group of C-list characters that are mostly uninteresting, wait till they get to their A-list stuff. That's actually
the creamy center.
The creamy good Marvel properties
will be 60 years
right.
old.
By the time we finally get the conclusion of
super
the X-Men
excited about superhero
quadrilogy. Yeah, right. Yeah. So bring on that stuff. Enough of the C-list Avengers. I don't care anymore. I mean, with one exception, I like Black Panther a lot.
Yeah.
But again, that's like now that's fucking complicated because poor Chadwick Boseman passed away.
Yeah.
And I wonder how they're going to deal with that. But it's whatever. I'm a little Avengers doubt. Okay.
Okay.
Let us know what you think. I mean, did you enjoy the show? Do you think like it was really good? I've seen some split reactions online. I've seen a lot of people really digging it. I think the show is very successful. I saw the streaming numbers were quite high.
Mm-hmm.
So people were really watching it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Marvel fan base is so huge that...
Yeah. Also pandemic.
Yeah. Did we talk about the Shang-Chi trailer yet? I don't think we've discussed that. Pretty cool.
I'm excited for it. It looks cool.
It's different, right? I mean, it's not...
I don't know anything about the comic book,
yeah,
but
either.
Like the trailer looked awesome.
Obscure 70s Marvel character. 10 rings, so presumably getting into the Mandarin stuff, but not in a jokey way like they did with Iron Man 3.
Yeah, I'm interested how they're going to do that.
Yeah, it'll...
Because they got like a lot of criticism for how they introduced the Mandarin.
Well, from people that are like... I don't know. I thought that criticism was ridiculous to care that like there wasn't a comic accurate Mandarin in that movie. I think that was actually some clever meta commentary by the Marvel writers there. Who's that guy? The guy who wrote Predator and the Lethal Weapon movies. His name is escaping me.
Mm-hmm.
They brought in that very famous writer director for Iron Man 3.
Right.
But I mean, the reason that Ben Kingsley played the Mandarin. It was because the Mandarin was one of Iron Man's like main villains in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also one of the ultra racist characters brought in by Stan and Jack in the 60s.
So that's why I'm saying like I'm a little bit like surprised that they would choose to bring the Mandarin in, and like how are they going to make it so that it's not?
They're probably just reframing it in some new non-offensive way. You know, it's funny. I saw a random article that I thought was interesting. I don't know how much credence you want to lend to this, Sonia.
Okay.
But they said the reaction of the Shang-Chi trailer in the United States was quite good. People were excited.
Mm-hmm.
But in Hong Kong and other like Asian markets, it was pretty bad.
Really?
Yeah. And one of the reasons I saw is they didn't think that the main actor was handsome enough.
Oh.
Which it makes me laugh. I don't know.
That actor is in like a lot of stuff, though.
He is?
Yeah. I don't know if he's Canadian or what, but... yeah, I've seen him in like a bunch of like movies and sitcoms recently.
Okay, all right. I didn't recognize. To me, he's an unknown. I mean, I recognize Awkwafina in there.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Awkwafina, noted Mets fan. Pretty cool. So, I mean, obviously, like, we are going to see all the Marvel movies. It's just a sad...
We're going to complain about them all the time.
A sad or happy fact. No, we are pretty good about... We don't complain about them.
No, I guess not. Just the Marvel shows.
No, but even still, we enjoy when we see them.
Yeah.
We get our little giddy excitement.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, a lot of... Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not so good.
Actually, yeah, that's not true, right? For all the movies, we always like them.
We've gotten stupid criticism over, like, liking Dark Phoenix when we saw it in the movies.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and if you listened to the subsequent podcast when we, like, digested it more over the subsequent months, which might be a lot to ask of people.
Like, had a little bit more of a criticism.
Yeah, really, actually, this movie was bad.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we're, again, you know, there's a difference between going to the movies and having a good time
mm-hmm.
versus, and talking about it the day you went to the movies, which is what we do, than letting a movie sit with you and replaying it a bunch and like thinking about it and saying, oh no, this movie's not that good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean that's a lot of the trick of the movies too. It's like a lot of times movies are specifically constructed to hit audiences physically in the seats for the first time
mm-hmm.
with certain types of jokes, like moments and reactions.
Right.
It's all designed like in a laboratory, and it's like how much does that translate over an extended period? Some movies are not designed...
Right. Well, particularly with humor, because one of the key elements of humor is surprise. So right. when you first see it, if there are things that are meant to be jokes in there, obviously the first time is going to be the best.
And a lot of times you'll laugh at a bad joke in a movie theater along with the whole audience right. and not even realize. It's contagious. You're not even realizing you're laughing, but it does put you in a mood where you're enjoying yourself.
Yeah.
And you're just sort of like the actual experience of the movie itself. It's like positive.
Oh, this is really making me miss going to the movies.
Well, we got our second vaccinations this past week. We had the Moderna shots. Not going to lie, shot two was pretty rough. That's not to say don't get it. Obviously, go get vaccinated.
Just take a day off work after.
Definitely
if you can.
Take a day off work for sure.
Just in case.
We got kind of trucked over. It was like a bad flu-like symptoms. Only for one day, though.
Yeah,
like
it wasn't
24
that bad.
Hours. Well, the length of time wasn't that bad, but the actual experience, I was complaining to you. but it is cool to be fully vaccinated, and we could go to the movies in a couple of weeks, Sonia, if we wanted to.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know if that – does that – like, is that an asshole move to do?
Why?
I don't know. I just wonder, like, should we still be quarantining for some reason? Or now we have, like, the golden pass to just do whatever we want again?
Well –
because you still got to wear a mask when you go into a supermarket, for sure, which is fine.
Yeah.
I mean, in New York City, I still think it's, like, the polite thing to do is to wear a mask on the street for the most part.
Right.
Although I've seen articles now, like, where people are trying to convince people not to wear masks outside. They say, you've been vaccinated. Why are you wearing a mask? It's time we get over the social stigma.
I mean, I guess, but also some of it is social signaling and, like, right. solidarity,
well, that's,
right?
Well, that's
because
the thing.
As a country, yeah. like, we're still less than 50% vaccinated or something at this point.
Yeah, and I'm sure, like, the social politics are different in New York City than they are in Texas,
yeah.
Where, like, they don't even have mask mandates.
Right.
And people probably don't give a shit if you're wearing a mask. Or they do more in the sense that, like, people aren't wearing masks. And if you're one of the few people that's like, can we please try to... like get over this thing. So it's a tricky thing. So it's sort of like, it's just like what a weird year and a half it's been at
yeah,
this point.
I know.
Is it a year and a half or is it?
No, not quite.
Not quite. It's not even a year. March.
It's like a year and a month or something.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. We were past March. Yeah. So yeah. So maybe to the movie soon.
Maybe.
To Black Widow shortly in the summer months.
Yeah, maybe.
All right, so that's all interesting. Again, let us know what you thought about Falcon Winter Soldier. Now, let us talk about X-Men Evolution, an episode called Self-Possessed. I thought this episode was going to stink. We saw the title. We saw it's a Rogue Deals with Her Emotions episode.
Mm-hmm.
And normally, in the original X-Men series, I'd be all excited about any Rogue episode.
Yeah.
But in this one, I'm like, I'm not like in love with this version of Rogue.
I've come around on it a little bit. They've had some good episodes with her so far.
Right. Yeah. I'm starting to let go of a lot of these biases I hold against these characters.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, this ended up being a really good episode.
You know, the top thing that doesn't make sense about Rogue in this episode, and not this episode, but the series in general, is that she's not fully clothed all the time. Like, she's not fully covered. She wears these outfits where, like, her arms are exposed, but she has gloves on, or where she'll wear, like, a shirt where her shoulders are exposed or something. And I'm just like, you are aware of your powers and how dangerous they are. Like,
well, she's
just
also,
by chance, if you brush against somebody by accident in a crowd or something, which is what happens in this episode. But, like, you know, like, I'm just like, Rogue, be careful. It makes me nervous.
This is the 17-year-old Rogue, not the mature 21-year-old Rogue from X.
Okay.
So, I mean, maybe this had happened to her in her teenage past and she learned her lesson about covering up more. Sticks to the full bodysuit we see her with in X-Men Task. But, so she makes a lot of poor choices. But how does this episode...
Well, it's not all her fault, though, in this one.
Well, let's talk about it. So how does it begin?
All right. So Rogue is playing squash against Cyclops.
That's a game I've never played. I think that would be a lot of fun.
It's fun. It's harder than it looks.
Well, I think
it
looks hard. I've always thought it looked hard.
Yeah.
I see characters sweating profusely in movies playing squash and being run ragged all over the place.
Uh-huh.
So it never looked easy to me.
Yeah, well... Get some squash rackets and we can play.
Where, you know, a good squash court?
I'm sure we could find one.
Well, I feel like the only times I've seen anyone playing squash are in super high, fancy, high society gyms that I don't have access to.
No, the park by us has courts you can play on.
But I thought squash, you have to be in a box. those courts are just, those are like wall walls.
Yeah, you're right. Those are like handball courts.
Handball, right, yeah.
Oh, but I've seen people playing with rackets there.
Okay.
I don't know.
I thought you have to play in a box
with squash. Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess that's true. Anyway, Cyclops and Rogue are playing squash. I guess it's like in the basement of the X-Mansion or something. And they're having a good time, and Rogue is like, oh, you know, do you want a rematch later on tonight? And Scott's like, oh, no, I'm going to that concert with Jean. How about you? And Rogue's like, oh, no, I don't have a date. And she's, like, still pining after Scott, clearly. And then Scott, like, says goodbye and leaves. And Rogue starts having these, like, vision premonition sort of things that, like, hurt her head. She, like, throws her racket and it gets crushed against the wall, basically.
Which concerns Wolverine later, crazily.
Right.
And maybe you want to play squash. I don't know, but...
So something's going on with Rogue. We don't know yet. Meanwhile, Mystique is in the back of a car or limousine or something with Destiny.
Destiny is this sort of like blind woman that was raising Rogue when we were first introduced to her.
Right.
We don't really know much about this character. I mean, there's just like this weird... The origins of Rogue in the show are a bit confusing.
Yes.
Because they do try to connect it to the comics in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of.
Yeah.
But... I mean, all right, so let's just skip to the end. I mean, like, it's revealed later that Mystique reveals to Rogue, like, I adopted you when you were 4 years old.
Right.
Which is sort of in line.
She says, like, search your memories, I am your mother.
I mean, but the comic version is, I think Rogue's a teenager. She runs away and falls in with Mystique in the bad crowd, and Mystique adopts her as a teenager, and she's, like, the teenage mom.
It just doesn't make sense that Rogue would have to search Mystique's memories for that... fact when Rogue herself was the one growing up, like,
I think
from 4 years old on with Mystique. You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying. The only explanation I can give right now, unless it, you know, until the show explains it more,
mm-hmm.
Destiny might have something to do with, like, wiping her memories for some reason.
Okay.
I don't know what Destiny's powers are entirely. It seems like she's just got the power of premonition, not like rewriting her mental brain state.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows? Maybe Magneto brought Rogue as a young child too and had mastermind eraser memories as like he did to Wanda.
So Destiny is also having premonitions about Rogue, which she's explaining to Mystique, and she says, but Rogue is in trouble. She may not live long enough to fulfill these premonitions that I'm having.
So Mystique is in danger. Right, she's in danger.
Yeah, I don't know. The thing with Destiny, like, this is one of those tropes that goes back to ancient, like, Greek tragedies and stuff, right? Where, like, you have a blind person.
An oracle.
An oracle, exactly. A blind person who can, like, see in mystical ways or something. So Rogue is at her desk the next morning. She's still having, like, these weird headaches and visions and stuff. In this one, it's with the Blob, which, I don't know. That never comes to pass in this episode, but okay.
Well, she turns into the Blob quickly.
Okay, yeah. And then Logan comes by with the broken squash racket being like, what's going on?
Again, it just seems weird that he would ever care about a broken squash racket. He seems like he would break a lot of objects in the X-Mansion.
Especially squash rackets.
All sorts of squash. All sorts of exercise equipment I feel Wolverine would break on a near daily basis.
So, Rogue doesn't really answer him. At that moment, Kitty comes by and grabs her and is like, come on, Jean's giving us a ride to school. And then they're in the car. Kurt teleports himself in, and they're all making fun of Jean, basically, because she has a date with Scott for the concert later on. And they're all, like, teasing her a little bit, except Rogue. She's just upset.
Yep. It would have been interesting if Jean accidentally read Rogue's mind and saw that she loves Scott, too. And
yeah.
They don't really go there. I guess Jean knows her boundaries.
Mm-hmm. She's more courteous than that.
Yeah.
All right. So then we're at school. And we see Rogue's old friend Risty show up again.
Who we know is Mystique.
Rogue's like, Risty, you disappeared. Where you been? And she's like, oh, you know, I got held up in England. And Rogue's like, oh, well, all right. and she's like, you know, I feel really bad that I didn't explain to you, like, the whole mutant thing. She goes to drink from a water fountain and electricity starts coming out.
She's starting to manifest powers from people she's absorbed previously. So in this case, it's Storm.
Right. And Rogue, like, just launches into a full explanation of her powers.
And Risty is there for her. She's like, hey, let's go to the concert tonight. I know you're still in love with Scott, but it'll be a lot of fun. And Rogue's like, oh, I missed you, Risty. You're a really good friend.
Right. Or is she?
Well, yeah, exactly.
Cut to the concert. Boom Boom is there dancing, having a great time. Kurt and Amanda are on a date there.
Nice little Boom Boom cameo.
Yeah. Kitty and Multiple Man, who is like 12 years old, she says she doesn't really want to go on a date with him, but like she just, whatever.
The New Mutants are funny and cute in the show in the sense that they're a little younger and they tag along the main X-Men.
Yeah, she's like, all right, you can hang out. Why not?
They're real spunky.
Jean and Scott are there on a date. They have like an awkward conversation about the fact that they're on a date. And then Rogue and Risty are there. And Risty's really like pulling Rogue into the crowd, being like, come on, let's have fun. And Rogue is freaking out a little. She's like, you know, I really don't do well in crowds full of people. And she's like starting to freak out a little bit, mm-hmm. like holding her head and stuff. And then just by accident, like her sleeve gets torn off by like the jostling of all the people and crowd surfer or whatever. And then like she's being pushed around and she starts just like absorbing a bunch of different people that she bumps into one after the other until finally she like bumps into Risty and has like quite a long exchange with her.
Right. And she gets the powers of Mystique.
Right.
So it's revealed to Rogue in this moment that Risty was Mystique. That's a huge betrayal. She's absorbed a lot of random people and now she's got Mystique's shape-shifting powers. And this is awesome. I mean, this is the show cranks it up to 11 here.
Yeah.
With this turn of events of showing how insane Rogue's power is, especially when combined with the shapeshifter.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing, I mean, it kind of. So the idea is that she's had these. The powers of everyone she's absorbed have been kind of lying dormant in her. Or at least in the memories, too, of these people.
Mm-hmm.
And now that she's got Rogue's... When she's got Mystique's shape-shifting power, she could really let these powers out again.
Mm-hmm.
But the question's like, doesn't Mystique sort of get the powers of the mutants she turns into as well?
Only when she is them, though.
I know, but this is like something that's been kind of confusing us for both runs of the X-Men shows. It's like, mm-hmm. what are the... And the movies, too. Like, what are the full extent of Mystique's powers? Like, she gets mutant powers when she transforms. And I thought it's just physical appearance. But it's a little tricky.
But for Mystique, it's not that the powers would, like, lay dormant inside
That's
her.
That's true, yeah.
So that she would be able to use them at any time. But for some reason, when Rogue absorbs her powers, Mystique turns back into herself. She doesn't maintain
Well, she's lost
her
it. I mean,
appearance as Risty.
Well, technically...
And it seems involuntary.
Yes. And, well, and that makes sense to me because when Rogue takes a mutant's power, they lose their power.
Mm.
She, you know, a lot of times they fall into a coma, but if they don't get into the coma, they will, like, Cyclops will lose his eye beams if Mystique absorbs.
That's true, yeah.
His life, and, you know, right. In the movie we saw Rogue absorb Wolverine's healing power at the end of X-Men 1.
Right.
And Wolverine's all his old wounds opened up, which, again, we discussed
at the time.
Doesn't make sense, because they were healed.
Yeah.
But, whatever. So
Mystique loses the power to transform for a while.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that makes sense to me. Again, the confusion point lies to me. It's like, what do Mystique's powers allow when she shapeshifts into a different character? And does it even make a difference when Rogue... Because they kind of established that the powers are in Rogue anyway to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's just giving her... Just having Mystique's powers is just sort of like a shallow thing. She just has the appearance of these characters of whose powers she can already manifest.
Right.
So, anyway...
But that's a big deal, like, being able to shapeshift anyway.
Yes.
Powers or not is still a big deal.
Yeah.
So she turns into Sabretooth, and, again, it's not really voluntary. It seems like it's just kind of happening to her.
She's having a psychosis breakdown.
Yeah, she doesn't have good control over her powers yet. She's young, and they're kind of new, and so she's kind of, like, wreaking havoc on this concert as Sabretooth. But all the other X-Men kids are there... And don't realize that it's Rogue, of course.
Yeah.
They're like, what? What is Sabretooth doing here? Like, we have to stop him.
Yeah. I mean, it's great. Like, they start, you know, the concert crowd, there's a riot or, like, a mad scramble to exit. Everyone is freaking out. The band gets off the stage. It's fun. It's a fun scene. You know, I thought earlier, too, another person who should have been nervous in the crowd, or at least expressed some nervousness, is Cyclops.
Mm-hmm.
At least based on my reading of the comic version of Cyclops, he's always so nervous about when he's out in public with those glasses on that someone's going to knock him over or they're going to fall off his face.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, him also being at a crowded, loud, jostling concert is a recipe for disaster.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this is a more calm and cool Cyclops than the nervous... paranoid one you get in the comic books. But interesting nonetheless.
Yeah.
So, but a cool fight scene breaks out here, right?
Yeah, all the other mutant kids are trying to stop her, and like one by one, you know, like she's absorbing their powers and she can kind of like use them back at them sometimes.
And Cyclops nails Rogue a bunch of times in this episode too with his optic blast.
Yeah.
Which right. is kind of I thought that was like sort of doubly painful for Rogue.
Hmm.
That her true love is smacking her around with his optic beams.
Yeah. Well, true love, I don't know.
Well, yeah.
Her crush.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Rogue gets, like, or Sabretooth, Rogue as Sabretooth, gets buried under, like, a pile of rubble, and when she emerges, she's Juggernaut.
Yeah.
And so, like, the concert is ruined, it's over, and all the mutants are like, what? Juggernaut's here, too? That's crazy.
Like, and to the show's benefit, too, I would say that the fight choreography and the action mayhem is done really well in this episode. We've criticized it in the past
mm-hmm.
for being very staged and lame. Oftentimes.
Yeah, in this episode, it's great.
It's good. It's kinetic. It like, makes sense.
Yeah.
Logically, from scene to scene, for the most part.
Right. A lot of actual, interesting action.
I like when Multiple Man gets involved, and it's great because there's the best scene in the episode is when Multiple Man is on, I guess, when Rogue is Sabretooth.
Mm-hmm.
And you just see Rogue absorb the powers from, like, all five different Multiple Men.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, shit. So now she's going to be Mystique with all these mutant powers plus Multiple Man. She can make duplicates of herself.
Yeah.
It's insane.
She can duplicate Sabretooth, essentially.
Right. Her powers multiply exponentially.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Rogue as... Juggernaut, I guess now, runs outside of the concert. The cops come after her, and here it's like her instinct kicks in to try to protect herself. First, she turns into Magneto and like moves the car around. Then she turns into Quicksilver to run away. Then she turns into Arcade, who just looks like a regular kid, basically.
Right, in this
and just kind of like strolls off, and like the cops are none the wiser. It. Yeah, it's like pretty cool.
And here's where Mystique finds Rogue in an alley and confronts her about the dark truths of her past. She says, oh, I adopted you when you're 4 years old. Search the memories you've absorbed from me to find out the truth. Rogue, of course, is crying and running away. They get into a little fight.
Rogue turns into Mystique for a minute here. So it's like Mystique fighting herself, which is always something that fans are glad to see in a comic.
I guess, yeah. This little scene next didn't quite make sense to me. Wolverine is riding in on his motorcycle. She turns into Sabretooth, and she's like, fight me, Wolverine.
It's like she's pulling up Sabretooth's memories that she's absorbed, and she has, like, Sabretooth's memory of his vendetta against Wolverine.
Yeah, but Wolverine finally uses his smelling powers.
I know, the moment we've been waiting for.
Yeah.
This episode really delivers.
Yes, he's like, it's not Sabretooth, you're Rogue.
Yeah.
I don't understand how, but that's what it is.
At this point, all the X-Men arrive.
Which doesn't make sense because doesn't Mystique now have the power to mask her mental thing and her scent? That was one of our biggest complaints we had on the show, is that how come Professor X or Wolverine never detected Mystique?
Mm-hmm.
And then it was vaguely mentioned at one point that her power evolved where she could hide that. So if her power evolves, it's some other layer trick that Rogue can't figure out yet.
Okay, yeah, I don't know.
But whatever, it's good. Wolverine smelled... Rogue.
Right. So the X-Men have been gone, like, regrouping and getting the rest of the X-Men out of the mansion. Some of them arrive.
They show up in the X-Men van.
Right.
Which is fun. It's a funny little piece of merchandise. Cyclops comes out of the side door, and Wolverine's like, don't shoot her. And he immediately blasts Sabretooth again into a warehouse.
Right. It's like his I-beam.
Right. Second or third time he's done that in this episode.
Right. And after that happens, Wolverine tells them.
Yeah, which is good. I was happy that he was able to quickly explain it. Everyone realizes.
Yeah, me too. I thought there was going to be like an extended misunderstanding scene.
Yeah.
I was bracing for, but no. So Cyclops and Wolverine go into the warehouse by themselves so that Rogue doesn't get like too freaked out by all the people around. Everyone else just kind of waits outside. In the warehouse, Rogue turns into Cyclops and blasts him back.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, wow, that hurt more than I thought it would.
I had a problem with that because... Cyclops is technically immune to his own optic blasts,
right,
as well as his brother Havix. So I feel like if Cyclops, and I feel like they showed this in the original cartoon as well, he was once trying to control his optic beams,
mm-hmm,
and he was just putting his hands over his eyes, and the beam was just sort of spreading out and
going around his fingers.
Going around his fingers and multiplying out that way.
Yeah.
And it's not like he's in pain.
Right.
It's just he can't, you know, he's immune to his optic blast.
Right.
So here, you know, whatever, they don't, that's, I'm sure in the comics that has never been entirely consistent either. I'm sure there's been one scene where he did a bank shot off a mirror,
mm-hmm,
and it blasted him back and he's like, ow.
Mm.
But, you know, I clocked it.
Yeah.
Get your Cyclops power knowledge straight, X-Men Evolution. You're on notice.
Maybe there's some loophole because it's Rogue.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. There could be a loophole there.
Who knows? They're just trying to play it for laughs, I think.
Or, yeah, you're right. I think you're right, yeah.
Next, Rogue turns into Storm.
And you see the full danger of Storm.
She's flying around, electrocuting stuff with lightning. Cyclops realizes that all of the people she's ever absorbed power and experience from are inside her, and he says, like, wow, it's like they're all fighting to take over. She has no control over it. And then, like, a huge, like, our second big fight scene breaks out, basically.
Well, so it's Storm, a Rogue as Storm is flying in the air, causing a hurricane. Out of nowhere, the X-Jet is flying in with Beast, Storm, and Professor X piloting it, and they immediately crash in the streets of some Long Island city where they are.
Mm-hmm.
This completely abandoned stretch of area where there's all this massive damage and destruction, but nobody, not even the cops, are present. And they crash land, and all the X-Men are trying to bring Rogue down out of the sky. Nightcrawler teleports to try to nab her. Nothing is working.
Like, every single one of them uses their powers to try to subdue her, and she uses the powers right back on them right away.
It's
cool. Right. I like the sequence a lot.
Definitely. So, like, we've been nitpicking a lot the last 5 minutes here, but this is a really good episode. It's exciting. It's interesting. The multiplication of her powers is very fascinating, and it's a nice little path they've explored here.
Yeah. It also implies that she can, like, mix and match all the powers, even when she just looks like herself. She's
kind of,
like, flying up in the air. She uses Jean's telekinesis against her. She's, like, spraying lightning all over the place and, like, a tornado. Like,
I was weirdly holding out hope that somehow this episode would evolve to the point where Rogue just gets her classic flying and super strength.
I was hoping that too, yeah.
Somehow, like, they would just combine into that, but no. But still, it's like, can we get that Rogue, please?
I know. Well, yeah. Let's see.
Right, because maybe going forward now, she's got...
Maybe once she's, like, healed, right?
She'll just be able to control all these powers of people she's absorbed, and she's the most powerful X-Man there is.
They can't let that happen, though.
Probably not. Probably can't do that.
So, Wolverine finally is able to kind of talk her down.
Well, that's after she finally utilizes multiple man's powers, and there's like five rogues shooting optic blasts at Wolverine at the same time.
Oh, yeah, right. That was cool. I forgot about that. But Wolverine is the one who finally can, like, talk some sense into her. He's like, listen, I know what it's like to have all these, like, thoughts in your head that don't make sense, and it's horrible, but you have to just kind of, like,
tough it out, he says.
Yeah, right. And then once he's got her a little bit calmer, Professor X comes in.
He does something useful.
For once.
Yeah.
I think this is the first useful thing he's done.
Well, in a long time.
He says, like, you know, we can wipe out all of these personalities one by one.
Right.
Just, like, stick with me.
And it's cool. There's, like, a nice little montage. She goes through all the characters she's absorbed throughout the show.
Yeah.
And I think the show did a pretty good job of basically pulling animation from all these previous episodes, where you see the moments in, you know, first it starts with that Cody football player guy. I don't know if he's called Cody in the show, probably. But then it goes through, like, the and probably even in the order of characters she absorbed.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really well done. I like that. And then she collapses.
And Wolverine's like, is she going to be okay? And Professor X is like, I have no idea, honestly. I can't tell you.
Let's get her back to the mansion.
Yeah.
Mystique, meanwhile, has been watching all of this from a rooftop, so
right.
Who knows? Her agenda basically was to...
She's selfish.
Yeah.
She thinks that somehow Rogue is tied into her fate, so
right.
She wants to make sure that... she did not go about this whole thing in a good way at all. This whole risky character she did, betraying Rogue in that way, and then...
Well, she's sneaky.
Yeah, she's sneaky, but that's it's like if her... But she tried to play it off later, Rogue, that my intentions are good here. You just have to understand what I was trying to do. And of course, it's shitty and bullshit. Everything she did was lame.
Shitty and bullshit.
Yeah, it was shitty and bullshit. So her plan was dumb.
So Wolverine just stays by Rogue's bedside the entire time that she's healing in the X-Mansion.
She does eventually, the classic, like, he gives an inspirational speech and she wakes up and grabs his hand and is crying.
Yeah, very nice.
It was a little touching scene.
Yeah, very nice.
I mean, I might just be, like, suffering from post COVID, like one day after intense COVID shot reaction, that I feel just like extra emotional right now. So that scene got to me a little bit though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Destiny is back in the car with Mystique and says, like, okay, Rogue is back in our future. What's going to happen is an ancient mutant will rise and Rogue and Mystique's fates are going to be in his hands.
Yeah.
So Apocalypse.
Yeah, I think we looked ahead. It's Apocalypse.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, I mean, good. I mean, like, season 3 has been really good.
Yeah, really good. I really like this episode.
I like this episode, too. Curious to see what their take on Apocalypse is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, probably going to be tough for them to top the version we got in X-Men Task, but you never know. But I was just feeling that, like, the original Apocalypse is so much more iconic. Well, the original animated Apocalypse, anyway. So we shall see, but, I think, like, if you just been listening to our podcast and you haven't really been watching the episodes, which I think is a possibility for some of our listeners,
mm-hmm.
I think you should give this one a watch. I think it's a pretty, like, good, like, it would be like a good one-off of X-Men Evolution
to get
an idea of what the show is like. It's the teenage X-Men and they had a lot of fun with Rogue's power. And showing you we've complained a lot about Rogue in general. Like, we don't like the wimpy Rogue in the movies and in X-Men Evolution in the sense that, like, Rogue should be able to fly and have super strength.
Mm-hmm.
And when she doesn't, it's just, it's, like, annoying to see her as this sort of vulnerable teenage girl that...
Well, because, like, they give her...
Has to tackle,
like,
people.
Karate power, kind of.
Yeah.
Like, which... But they don't show her, like, training... for it. There's no reason she should be as, like, strong
well,
and acrobatic.
Well, she is. She's in the danger room there, you know.
I guess.
She's like Sam Wilson. Sam Wilson doesn't have any superpowers. He's just doing backflips in his backyard.
Yeah.
That's okay. What Rogue's up to.
Yeah.
She has the intense Marvel karate training method.
Right.
You know, just the basic, like, you know, fourth level black belt training you get as a superhero.
Yeah. Okay. But, anyway, good episode.
Yeah, are those your final thoughts?
Yep.
All right, good night, everybody.
Good night.